To start with the topic of judgment, kindly refer to Chapter 18 in your Bare Act, which deals with trial before a Sessions Court. The opening section, Section 225, says, trial to be conducted by a public prosecutor, which means in a Sessions Court, the trial shall be conducted by a public prosecutor, which very well includes additional public prosecutors. But it should be very clear that assistant public prosecutors do the prosecution work in magisterial courts. Then comes Section 226, which tells that the opening case is for the prosecution who opens the case by describing the charge he brings against the accused and stating that by what evidence he proposes to prove the guilt of the accused. Now, what becomes important for us is Section 227, read with Section 229 and 232. Now, the first topic, the first subtopic in Topic 8 is discharge and acquittal. One thing should be very clear to all of you, that discharge is a state before framing of charges and acquittal is a state after framing of charges. So I'm reading out Section 227 for you, which is dealing with discharge. It says, if upon the consideration of the record of the case and the documents submitted therewith, and after hearing the submissions of the accused and prosecution in this behalf, the judge considers that there is not sufficient ground for proceeding against the accused, he shall discharge the accused and record his reasons for doing so. Herein, the documents which are before the magistrate or before the Sessions Court are those documents which have been submitted to him along with the charge sheet under Section 173, subsection 2, that is police report. These could be any documents. It would be charge sheet, it can be MLC, it can be post-mortem report, it can be expert opinion, it could be anything. And if after considering those documents, the court is of the opinion there is not a sufficient ground to proceed against the accused, then without proceeding ahead, the court will discharge the accused. And for making such discharge, the court has to necessarily record reasons. Now coming to Section 229. 229 deals with conviction on plea of guilty. It says, if the accused pleads guilty, the judge shall record the plea and may in his discretion convict him thereon. Now, this is very important that it has been asked by the accused, do you plead guilty? And if he says that, yes, I do plead guilty, then he will be convicted. But you should mark the words. It says, the judge shall record the plea that he has recorded the plea that he pleads guilty and may in his discretion convict him thereon. That is, even if the accused pleads guilty, it is not a mandate that the court or the judge shall necessarily convict him. He may keep the plea of guilty with him and ask for the evidence to be recorded because somewhere in his mind, at the back of his mind, he thinks that if the case proceeds, this person who is pleading guilty before him might not be proved to be guilty. Then comes the important section, Section 230, which deals with date for the prosecution evidence. Now, if accused refuses to plead guilty or he does not plead guilty or he claims to be tried, then in that case, the judge shall fix a date for the examination of prosecution witnesses and may on the application of the prosecution issue any process for compelling the attendance of any witness or the production of any document or other thing. That is, now we have started with the trial because the accused wants to be tried and he does not plead guilty. Now 231, which deals with evidence for prosecution, on the date so fixed, the date which has been fixed under Section 230, the judge shall proceed to take all such evidence as may be produced in support of the prosecution. The judge may in his discretion permit the cross-examination of any witness to be deferred until any other witness or witnesses have been examined or recall any witness for further cross-examination. Now Section 231, subsection 2 deals with an angle that if on a particular date when the evidence of the prosecution has been called, if all the witnesses have not been examined in chief, then the cross-examination of these witnesses can be deferred to a later date and the defense counsel can ask the court let all the examination in chief be over and then I would like to proceed with my cross-examination. Then comes Section 232, which deals with acquittal, which you have to read with Section 227, which was dealing with discharge. Now, Section 232 says, if after taking the evidence for the prosecution, now evidence, moment we have taken any evidence, it means the trial has begun. So it should be very clear to you that discharge is a stage pre-trial and acquittal is a stage post-trial. Discharge is a stage before the framing of charges and acquittal is a stage after the framing of charges. So what 232 says, if after taking the evidence for the prosecution, examining the accused and hearing the prosecution and the defense on the point, the judge considers that there is no evidence against the accused, that the accused committed the offense, the judge shall record an order of acquittal. Now here the word order is to be read in the sense of the word judgment. That is, he would give the judgment of acquittal. Now if this acquittal is not made, if there is no compliance of section 232, then we go on to have sections 233, 234, which deals with defense evidence. That is, now he would, since he has his guilt has been established by the prosecution and he has not been acquitted, so next stage is the stage of evidence or entering upon his defense. That is section 233 and 234. Now in 233, when the accused is not acquitted under section 232, he shall be called upon to enter on his defense and adduce any evidence he may have in support thereof. If the accused puts in any written statement, the judge shall file it with the record. Now this is very important. Section 233 subsection 2 is using the phrase written statement, which is very well used in section 313. When the statement of the accused is recorded by the court, then section 313 subsection 5, which has been inserted by 2009 amendment, gives the permission to the accused that he need not necessarily answer the questions in the court. He can give those answers in the form of a writing or in the form of a writing to the court, and this written statement in the form of his answers to the questions which have been put to him by the court can be filed by the court. Now, if the accused applies for, I'm coming to section 233, subsection 3. If the accused applies for the issue of any process for compelling the attendance of any witness or the production of any document or thing, the judge shall issue such processes unless he considers, for the reasons to be recorded, that such application should be refused on the ground that it is made for the purpose of vexation or delay or for defeating the ends of justice. That is, on both the sides, if the prosecution wants to call any witness, then also they have to take the help of the court. And if the accused wants to call any witness, then they also have to take the help of the court by the issuance of process. And that I have been telling you that there are two kinds of processes. Summons or warrants are to be issued to ensure the presence of the witness in the court. Then comes the final stage, the stage of arguments, which are known as final arguments, section 234. When the examination of the witnesses for the defense is complete, the prosecution shall sum up his case and the accused or his pleader shall be entitled to reply. So mind it, under sections 230 and 231, the evidences were produced. Now how these evidences would be useful in proving the guilt of the accused, that would be explained in detail in these arguments under section 234. And for this, the accused or his pleader shall be entitled to reply, that they would be asked that why they should not be accused of these offences, of the commission of these offences, when there are evidences against them. Provided that when any point of law is raised by the accused or his pleader, the prosecution may, with the permission of the judge, make his submissions with regard to such point of law. For example, if the accused challenges the evidence of the prosecution on any point of law, then the prosecution has to give clarifications or submissions with regard to such point of law only after seeking the permission of the court. Then under section 235, which is very important for our purposes because our case of Ajay Pandit is dealing with section 235 subsection 2, it says, after hearing arguments and points of law, the judge shall give a judgment in the case. Now, this is very important. This particular section connects us to the chapter of judgment. Now, chapter of judgment, in chapter of judgment, we will be doing sections 353 to 355, and the chapter is chapter 23. 7. So moment you read 235 subsection 1, after hearing arguments and points of law, the judge shall give a judgment, and how that judgment shall be, that has to be in consonance with chapter 27 dealing with judgment, sections 353 to sections 355. Kindly read those sections, because those sections are just, they just require a reading. In case you have any doubts, you can always ask me. Now coming back to section 235, subsection 2, very, very important for our purposes. If the accused is convicted, the judge shall, unless he proceeds in accordance with the provisions of section 360, hear the accused on the question of sentence and then pass sentence on him according to law. Now the very importance of this section is that if at all the accused is convicted, the sentence cannot be pronounced upon him without hearing him on the quantum of sentence. Unless and until this convicted person is making compliance with section 360, which deals with probation, then otherwise he has to be necessarily heard on the question of sentence, and then sentence should be passed.